Welcome to the Ag Matters podcast. Agriculture matters because it's all around us and provides countless benefits to our economy. Whether you live in an urban or rural community, from Steinbach to Swan Valley, from Melitta to Neepawa, agriculture affects everyone and has a presence in every community, providing countless benefits to our economy and quality of life. Agriculture matters not only for the tens of thousands that work in the sector here in Manitoba, but for all Manitobans concerned about having a food system that provides access to affordable, nutritious food. It's not limited to farmers. We have veterinarians, agronomists, data scientists, researchers, financial advisors, HVAC technicians, commercial truck drivers, food processing workers, and so many more. Those working in agriculture are leaders in Manitoba's economic growth, significantly contributing to advancing Manitoba as a provider of safe, nutritious, sustainable, and affordable food at home and across the globe. Welcome to Ag Matters. I'm Jordan Cecilia, and in today's podcast, we're talking about doing the right thing. So, as always, we're going to get an industry professional's expertise and opinion on this, as well as a producer, and we're going to bring those views together to give that whole view on what ag is doing to make sure that we are moving forward strong and moving forward strong as a group. So again, do the right thing. Today, we've got David McInnes, founder and executive director of the Center for Agri-Food Benchmarking. I'm going to throw this straight to David just to get his, we're going to bring it right down into what he thinks it is. And then we're going to show you how that plays into doing the right thing. So, David, introduce yourself to us and tell us about what you do.
Well, thanks, Jordan. Hi, everybody. And I love your title, Do the Right Thing. I'm going to change it. I think it should be Do the Cool Thing. And I think what our 146 private-public partners are doing is very cool. We have come together. They have come together to create something new in Canada and globally leading, and that is to create the country's first agri-food sustainability index. And this is a bottom-up initiative driven by producers, food processors, agribusinesses, retailers, governments, social, environmental, and indigenous organizations, academia, financial institutions, innovation organizations. Wow, the list goes on. We don't represent everybody, but it's a coalition that's created this initiative to essentially document how we're doing on agri-food sustainability.
And what you just hit on without saying it is, I think, as I'm getting deeper into the agriculture world and as I'm doing these Ag Matters podcasts, it is fascinating to me to see people that would typically, if I'm a consumer looking at this, I'm seeing competitors. And then when we go to the other side of this and we're talking about what you've accomplished with the agri-food benchmarking, is now we've got all of these people on the same team, and it's this forward motion to show exactly how much agriculture matters and how focused on, again, doing the right thing we are with the sustainability. So talk a little bit to that of where it's kind of come from, because you've been doing this for a few years.
Well, yeah, and so the competitors still compete, and we have companies and organizations around our table that are highly and deeply competitive amongst each other. But I believe that where sustainability is going is that there's a need for some serious collaboration. And I don't know about you, Jordan, but you know, when you hear people talk about collaboration, and I, for one, have done this, it sort of just rolls off the tongue. Yeah, we need to collaborate to improve what we do. And it's an easy thing to say. But this group has come together and has systematically collaborated. We call this a pre-competitive initiative. That's how folks who do compete in the marketplace could come together and align around something that is a common interest to all. And that is how a food system that is here in Canada ought to measure itself around sustainability. And as we create that alignment around those indicators, of which we have 20, by the way, in our index, what we're doing is we're not telling anyone what to do, and we're not measuring individual farms or individual companies, but we're providing this overall view of how we ought to measure sustainability. And to get that list and agree on what should be in and out has required some pretty impressive collaboration. And it's thanks to producers and the companies and the others that we have really come together around this.
So let's talk about that, because I mean, 20 markers is a big number, but it's I mean, when you look at the picture of sustainability, right? Because it's funny, again, this is now the guy that came from the consumer side, only now having the doors open and meeting producers, meeting financial institutions, meeting everyone and getting having these conversations. It was amazing to me the first time I heard an executive director or somebody that works with the larger producer base talk about sustainability and not just mean environment and not just mean greenhouse gases, but it's got to be sustainable financially. It's got to be sustainable for diversity and the culture. And that all of a sudden, when you start adding these different legs to the chair, of course, there's going to be different markers. So how did you and your team kind of come up with the 20 we're working with?
Well, so just a couple background data points, actually, and then I'll answer your question. So there are 20 indicators. That includes well over 130 individual metrics. And the index pilot, which we published in May of 2023, has four sustainability blocks, and you essentially mentioned them. It's the environment, climate change, food integrity, which includes food safety. After all, you can't have a sustainable food system without a safe food system. Economic sustainability, you have to have profitable farms and profitable companies over time to be sustainable over the longer term, and something called societal well-being, which is about the workforce. It's about labor. It's about opportunities for inclusivity throughout the food system. It also includes food security and animal care. So that's a holistic view. And where the partners went in our process was trying to have deep discussions across this a diversity of partners and players to really decide what was material to measure, what should be in and what should be out of scope. And where we zeroed in and was to make this truly meaningful. And so we're looking at something called outcomes-based metrics. And that's the real test of how sustainable a food system is. Versus, for example, practices. So, for example, a lot of the metrics we have today in the agriculture and food sector are based on practices. How do I apply my fertilizer? How do I treat my animals? How am I managing the water systems? A lot of that is about practices. Really important, because good practices lead to better outcomes. But we're trying to focus on those outcomes, which is a higher level of evidence or proof, if you will. And that's where the global and the national marketplace really is measuring or assessing change. So I think the partners really were motivated to make sure that they all came together to get meaningful and useful indicators, recognizing that you can't measure everything.
And you touched on a part here that has, again, been something brand new to me is I'm as Canadian as it gets. I will wave the flag everywhere I go. I love being Canadian. Now, competition on the global market for food product sales and for the base product, like selling grain, selling animals. What you're talking about here is a critical point where it's the practices. We have phenomenal practices in Canada. Animal care is second to none, and finding producers that love the land and look to pass it on to the next generation, those aren't issues. That's again, love being Canadian on that front. But now proving that, I think, is where you're discussing, correct? Like with the outcomes. And then on the global scale, being if we can't prove that our practices are as good as we say they are, then that's where we're going to start running into the next series of issues. Competing in a global market, correct? Is that?
Well, yes. I mean, there's always going to be space for customers, either here or abroad, who buy food or commodities or ingredients based on price, based on quality, based on reliability, and sustainability may not be their number one reason. But what we're seeing across the board is there is a wholesale shift taking place around sustainability. And that is that we have regulators and legislators who are increasingly introducing new requirements to demonstrate sustainability. We have supply chains themselves, whether we're talking producers, processors, or retailers, they're setting targets on sustainability, and I'm including here at home, but also abroad. So they are implementing these key requirements upon themselves to respond to what you said, a very changing marketplace. Then we have the financial markets, something called ESG, environmental social governance factors, which is a term to describe and to assess risk and opportunity within how banks and financial institutions lend money or invest, and how borrowers need to assess their risk in order to meet financial institution due diligence and materiality questions. And so those are just a handful, although they're big, a handful of major catalysts that's putting sustainability at the very center of the food trade, or the domestic market itself. And so this is what we're responding to. And if we as a country are able to and support the claims we make about how sustainable our food system is, this is a competitive advantage, because the whole planet, frankly, is trying to produce food more sustainably. And how do we, and this is only going to intensify, so how do we demonstrate that? It becomes more and more important.
You know, I hate time limits on these podcasts. Before we go anywhere else or say goodbye for this, I got to know your background, because you know what? We jumped right into the conversation because there was so much to get into. But your passion for this can't just come from picked it up last week. So how does this all play into it? Because to found something like this, to bring together over 140 different, you know, stakeholders and to do something like that. Tell us a little bit how that came about for you. Cause this, like I say, your passion for this is jumping through the screen. So I love it.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, it's been a wonderful project, and it's been a huge thank you to the partners who've made it happen. But my background is I'm a consultant in the agri-food space for the last several years. Prior to that, I headed up a policy think tank in the agriculture and food space. But prior to that, I came from a different background. I came from a life sciences company in the financial services space. But one thing that it became very clear to me throughout my career is that true change requires a systems-wide approach. And that doesn't mean that individual companies or governments or producers don't need to focus on what they do well. But if we're really going to respond to big, big changes such as sustainability, these transcend watersheds, these transcend borders, these transcend the supply chain players. And I think that systems opportunity is what we have in front of us here in Canada to respond to this sustainability agenda and win. This is just one project, or this is one part of how we can do so. It's a tool to express that, those credentials, and kudos to the partners for coming together.
Well, David, I can understand why you're the founder and executive director for the Agri-Food Benchmarking Center. Fantastic conversation, and I couldn't agree more. We get the whole team on board, we make the system work, and the next thing you know, we are that leader globally with the data and the ability to back it up. Fantastic conversation. Thanks for being our industry lead on Do the Right Thing. So much more to this discussion. I can't wait till we get to have, I might even ask you to stay on and chat with me a little bit more about this, but fantastic information. I'm looking forward to it. And you know what? We didn't even say it, but this is the way to build public trust And it's just wonderful to see so many people getting on board with you.
Well, absolutely, Jordan. Thanks very much. There's always more to do, but I really appreciate the time you've taken today and appreciate the interest in this. Take care.
You bet. And on to the next guest. Thank you so much. All right. Welcome back to the Ag Matters podcast. I'm with Haley Jeffries from Prairie Fava. And Haley, when it comes to doing the right thing, I think that this is something that, as long as I've known you, has been at the heart and soul of your entire journey from, you know, jumping into a family farm that's through marriage and then saying, hey, we've got a product that, why let it go to waste in any way, shape, or form? Let's utilize this high protein product, utilize as much of it as we can, reducing wastes and really just making a high grade product. So let's talk about how you got started with Prairie Fava.
Yeah. So fava beans were being grown in Manitoba, and my husband and partner were growing them for seed to sell to other farmers, but farmers were struggling to find a consistent market to sell them to. So fava beans are naturally the highest nitrogen fixing crop. So they fix the most amount of nitrogen in the soil. So great for soil health, and farmers wanted to grow them, but were struggling to find a consistent end market. And that's where I kind of came in and said, well, geez, let me look into this. And when we started doing more and more research around fava beans and the opportunities, especially in the plant-based world and the plant-based proteins, fava beans just shone in terms of, you know, they're extremely high in protein, you know, ranging from 27 to 30%, 32%, you know, protein versus peas that were very, you know, have been very popular at around 22%. And they also have a very clean flavor profile. So they were extremely intriguing in terms of how can we use this traditional bean source or this traditional protein source in more and more food products on the shelf.
Well, and talk about nitrogen fixing, because this is a big part of the green space that is farming, is it's the crop rotation and ensuring that the land gets back to its highest yield potential. That's I'm saying it my way, but that's kind of the way it works, right?
Yeah. So it's fava beans will fix the nitrogen in the soil. So they are actually, now all pulses are great for the soil, and crop rotation is obviously very important. Rotating on that kind of 3 to 4 year rotation plan. But where fava beans too are interesting in terms of a crop rotation is where farmers couldn't necessarily plant peas or other pulses because it was too wet. So it's finding different pockets in the Western Canadian prairies where we're looking for another crop to put in their rotation, but maybe they couldn't use one of the other pulses that were, you know, more popular in terms of the market demand. And so fava beans kind of fit that need for the farmer for their crop rotation. They're super healthy for the soil, but where they were lacking was the consistent end market.
And this is the great thing is I love, I don't know if it's your actual tagline, but I love seeing making fava famous. That's so this is at the root of what Prairie Fava is doing. It's not that you sell a particular product, although we do have a few that are delicious on the market. You're selling ingredients. That's
the long and the short. Yeah. So we joke with, you know, we always joke around that, you know, we want to make fava famous in terms of, I guess, the North American food market. So we're seeing more products on the grocery store shelves using fava as an ingredient because it's so versatile, from a flour to a protein source. But we are a whole ingredient company selling the whole beans, split beans, and fava flour to food makers that are actually making the end products that are going to the grocery store, or to food processors who would take our ingredient and then further process it as a maybe a protein ingredient, for example. So we sell to both. We do have a local product that we are selling that's a finished snack product. And that was just to kind of serve the local demand, but also show other food makers, like, look at how you can take 8% fava flour, a little bit of pea fiber, and puff it. It's So it's called extrusion, and it turns into almost like a puff Cheeto, and you're getting incredible protein, incredible fiber, and it tastes great. So it's a great product for families, especially kids, having young kids.
And I'm going to attest to that. I think I was one of, like, right as you were bringing this to the market as a, as an ingredient or something to show people, I tasted it, fell in love immediately. Like, it's just, it's too good for words. But here's where I want to go with this is that process to build that product. This is what I love about Manitoba. And here's where we're going to brag about Ag Mattering in Manitoba is, if I'm not mistaken, you made that product with one of the universities here. Like, it's a project that you found funding for.
Yeah. So we do everything in terms of the processing, the primary processing here in Manitoba. Some of the beans, not all, because we do still buy from other provinces for fava beans, but some of the beans we do buy are even Manitoba grown. So Manitoba grown, processed. We do work with a partner in Saskatchewan. So it's Prairie Pride, but all in terms of, you know, the processing and where the company is, it's in Manitoba.
And now to that, when you're doing research or when you're developing or finding more the qualities of fava, what's the support like in Manitoba or for your company, government grants, et cetera? How has that been for you guys?
Manitoba is a huge, it's a great a province for resources for entrepreneurs. We've been very fortunate now, Manitoba and Canada, I would say. We're very lucky in terms of the province we live in for the support, especially in agri-food. And then we're extremely lucky in terms of the country we live in, you know, with organizations like Protein Industries Canada and CanExport kind of focusing more on Canadian products. But in terms of Manitoba, we have some really great resources like Red River College, like Prairie Research Kitchen. Working with them, we work very closely with them directly. We work very closely with Prairies Can, and we are so lucky that we have the support, because as an entrepreneur, those resources are critical.
Well, and I guess you're also confident you're making the best product possible, because if it was up to yourself, it's one of those things where as you have your own capital available, you'd go as far as you could with that. Now, this is these extensions, and not only extensions on funding. This is something you said to me one time years ago when we first met, was it's not just the funding, but it's the people that are giving guidance and suggestions. And if you can speak to that, I'd love it.
Yeah, absolutely. We, you know, funding is one thing. All, you know, young companies or startups or entrepreneurs, you know, cash is king, obviously, to help grow your company. But the support in you know, strategic resources and the support of the entrepreneurial network that was in Manitoba, the support from government grants, from government organizations that are in Manitoba, is crucial for helping learn and network and connect, because ultimately we do business with people we know and we can connect with. That's where the fundamental is. So yeah, definitely the people and the networking and the relationships and being very Prairie proud is something we're excited about.
And now one last thing that I'm going to get you to comment on, because I know you're technically the company's still young. So as an entrepreneur that's starting this thing up, and I'm seeing you like literally around the world, you're traveling around the world. It's so great to see that Canada is being represented like it is worldwide. What would you say to a young startup in agri-food? Where do they need to go first steps?
Oh, that's a good question. That's fully loaded. honestly, if I look back at my journey, and there's no one way, you know, to be a successful entrepreneur or to start a business, but I honestly think it's just putting one foot in front of the other and networking with various resources. So networking with other entrepreneurs, that are at maybe a similar stage to you, networking with entrepreneurs who can provide mentorship and resources, networking with the government organizations, you know, like Prairies Research Kitchen, Red River College, like Manitoba Food Development Center, like understanding what programs are available from an R&D side, and then also networking with where can they get access to government funding and government grants and provincial resources versus federal resources, and how do those work together? So I wouldn't say it's necessarily a one-stop shop. I would say start by just literally networking with, you know, a realm of resources, and then deciding, okay, now here's my path and let's be strategic and let's go forward, but get as much information as you can.
I think if I was to sum up what I'm hearing from you is it can be done, and it can be done. You're not alone.
I think that's
something, you know, as somebody that also has done some entrepreneurial things, you feel like an island to yourself, but if you're networked and you're finding out about the resources and you're finding out, and you really start to see, and this is one thing I will shout as loud as I can about Manitoba, is there is a lot of people that want to see Manitoba businesses succeed and are there that help pass that extra mile of just here, call this number and leave me alone. There's a lot of people that are there to support, that shake your hand at events, that ask how business is going with a genuine want to know that you're succeeding in it. And when you say, hey, we're struggling here, there's a lot of people that'll jump to help. So if that's what I'm hearing correctly, that's your experience too?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And I really think that if you actually look at, you know, the successful companies and the successful entrepreneurs from Manitoba per capita, it is, I remember years ago, and I don't know what it is today, and I don't know the exact numbers, but it is jaw-dropping about how many successful entrepreneurs have come out of Manitoba, successfully exited, or there's generational successful businesses right here in this province, not necessarily just in the ag food space, but across the board. So it's a great place to do business, and there's a huge network of people that we lean on that have been there, done that, and can provide great resources. So they're out there to be able to lean on them.
And it's all based around doing good for the land, creating a product out of Manitoba that's as clean and delicious. Again, those Yum Loves, incredible. I'm just, every time we speak, I get more excited about Manitoba. So thank you. And I can't wait to taste whatever comes next out of the kitchen and the product line.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much. We're very proud to be a Manitoba company.